It is time for the week that was, and joining us in the studio this morning, the leader of Territory Alliance, Terry Mills. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
We have got the opposition leader, Leah Fenocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
We've got Natasha Files, the Attorney General. Good morning.
Morning, Wolfie. Morning, listeners.
Well, it's been a busy week, and I feel as though things are sort of starting to get back to normal in some ways. We know that there's still plenty of restrictions in place when it comes to the coronavirus, but we are being told now that mandatory quarantining, there is going to be some changes. Well, in hotels, for people coming into the territory from interstate, that mandatory quarantining is going to be rolled back. That's what the Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, announced yesterday. But those coming into the Northern Territory are still going to be required to self-quarantine for 14 days. And the Chief Minister has said this change will not apply to people arriving from overseas, including overseas arrivals transiting from interstate. So obviously, there's still going to be quite a bit of monitoring in place. Falsey, is it a situation where those people also need to be tested?
So, Katie, we've seen with the coronavirus this week, importantly, a case in Queensland, a tragic case where a gentleman has passed away, and they're still trying to work out that contact. The gentleman hadn't left his region for quite a period of time, and I think it highlights to people that people can be carrying this virus and not even realise because their symptoms can be so mild. He was quite unwell, and our thoughts are with his family. But in terms of going forward in the changes to quarantine that the Chief Minister announced, it is intended that people will be tested and then they'll do that period of quarantine and then be retested. We'll, of course, review this based on medical evidence, and this has been right the way through the coronavirus, around the evidence shows us about day 10 or 11 is when people seem to be diagnosed, but it can be quite early on, and we had one case where it was day 13, and so we need to make sure that we adjust these measures but protect Territorians.
Look, there's no doubt, I think, that we still need to make sure that people are monitored when they do come into the Northern Territory. The figures that I was surprised by earlier in the week is the number of people that are still coming into the Northern Territory, and we know that there's obviously the exemptions in place, and that doesn't mean that they're not still having to go into quarantine. But look, the debate continues to rage on about whether those borders should or should not open. We've got a lot of industry leaders saying that they'd like those borders to open as early as, well, next month, July, even August. I mean, look, I think we'd be just happy with a plan at this point.
I think it's really important that the Chief Minister does give a plan. I mean, I know I asked many, many questions yesterday during the Public Accounts Committee hearing, both of the Chief Minister and Dr. Heggie, the Chief Health Officer for the Northern Territory. But I don't necessarily know that it provided much more clarity. Of course, yesterday's announcement by the Chief around some of these, quarantining in home situations is a step in the right direction, but we really need much more. We're hearing very strongly federally that there is no medical reason why our borders should be closed. Of course, Territorians, do not want to expose ourselves to an unnecessary risk, but our economic crisis is here. It's
just
already
on that
arrived.
Point, Katie. So the Australian Chief Medical Officer's advice is the federal framework, which is for a COVID safe Australia, and it includes advice on interstate travel, and it does not recommend restarting interstate travel until at least to the last step in the framework. So we're somewhere in between stages one and two. The Territory is ahead of the game because of the measures we put in place early, the tough measures. So in terms of the advice, Hugh Heggie has made it quite clear that he acted to save the lives of Territorians and protect Territorians, and we will continue to do so.
I think no one's disputing that, but it's getting to the point where the Chief Minister really needs to be very clear about what is going to happen. He said yesterday he would review this on a week-by-week basis and then provide 30 days' notice. That is still an extensive time period ahead of us. Well, he really needs to come out with a date and a plan that we can work to.
Look, my view of it is, as well, I totally understand the situation that we're in terms of making sure that we get that medical advice, but we also need to be listening to industry. And it's not the Chief Minister's job to lay blame on the Chief Medical Officer or say that it's his decision whether we do or do not open the borders. In my humble opinion, it's actually our politicians and our leaders. It's our leaders' job to work out what's the best balance.
And but this like is I've another said, example of outsourcing, Casey. Must be Friday. Katie, you know, this government...
Cases on your mind.
Cases. This, you know, this government loves to do one thing more than rack up debt and kill our economy is outsource its responsibility to other people. You know, ultimately, this is a decision for the government. They need to take the best advice they can get, but it rests on them and they have to balance that risk of any whatever the health risk is with the risk of an economic crisis that we will never come back
from. And
this
is, I think, where we're at Australia-wide. You know, it's not just here in the Northern Territory at this point in time. It is Australia-wide where we have to balance that because, yes, we do need to make sure that we're doing all that we can to keep Australians and indeed Territorians safe, and I would never dispute that, particularly given the fact that we've got a very vulnerable community. But we also need to think about the issues that we are creating or that we've got and that are going to flow on, not only with the economy but with mental health and all sorts of other issues associated with the fact that we're locked down.
Katie, in terms of the Northern Territory, we are in a place, you know, that we did not predict. There's no manual, there's no roadmap for coronavirus. I did not think that we'd be in a position 2.5 months after our first case that we would be essentially COVID-free, having not had community transmission and not had a death. We absolutely understand the impact that this health crisis has caused on the economy, and it's devastating, and we've seen that around the world, whether they've had huge numbers of deaths like the thousands they've seen in Europe versus, you know, the small numbers, every case so tragic here in Australia. So it is very difficult. There's no roadmap, but we are certainly balancing the health advice, but also listening to what Territorians want.
That's the problem. There isn't a roadmap. And I think if people are getting information and trying to weigh this up and are looking to our leadership to help us navigate, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We were told that this was to get ahead of the curve so that we can get our system in a state where we would be able to respond. Well, we've certainly done that in spades. And a credit to Territorians and the response of government at that time. But just 2 days ago, I drove down to Katherine and back, and I called in, as everyone would do, at the Adelaide River Road, pub there. It was completely empty. And there is the capacity for creative thinking if there was, in fact, the political will to create a model and a protocol and allow the information to go out so people could begin to plan and to ease the territory into the new phase. Now, if something weird happens in 2 weeks' time, we could adjust it. But the absence of any clear instruction or any clear plan or any real confidence or political will to open up and to allow us to have the confidence to begin that next phase is debilitating.
Katie, when there's no roadmap, there's no manual around corona, but in terms of the territory, we have very much been able to balance, and we've got a clear path forward. We've
it's
eased restrictions ahead of the rest of the country, and next Friday those restrictions will ease.
It's confusing.
Well, I think it's been very clear in terms of the restrictions we've put in place, those measures working.
It's clear it's a political agenda.
The thing that's not clear at this point in time, obviously, is those borders. And I think that there's no doubt that there is dispute all around the nation when we talk about this. I mean, New South Wales is open for business. Gladys Berejiklian
has 350 active cases, and we don't want them coming into the territory.
Well, but wouldn't we be checking people as they come in, as we are now, with those that are crossing the borders?
So in terms of the virus, what the Chief Minister announced tomorrow, where people will be tested within the first 72 hours and doing the 14 days quarantine and then a test in the last 72 hours, we can't relax more than that because we've still got active transmission in other areas of Australia.
Natasha, I'd have to ask you, is this all... I was at a Public Accounts Committee hearing a little while back, and as I was listening to all of this, it seemed to me that the underlying premise here is, you know, one, we're saying saving lives, and we're assuming that we're going to eradicate coronavirus. Is that where you're at?
There's no cure. There's no vaccine.
We just hold until it's gone or we've got a vaccine and we just crash the economy? Is that where we're going?
In terms of the coronavirus, there's no cure. There's no vaccine.
So therefore, what do we do?
If you let me finish, I can explain. Okay. So we're working with health professionals, and we in Australia and the Territory particularly, we haven't seen community transmission and we haven't seen deaths. I did not think that at the outset of this that we would be in this situation. We, every time they have relieved measures, reduced the requirements for constraint overseas, you've seen a correlation with an increase in cases. We went through a stage a couple of weeks ago where we eased restrictions significantly. People are back at the gym. They're able to go out for a meal. Next Friday, those restrictions ease again. Mm-hmm. And we also will see the territory bubble widen. We'll go, those biosecurity zones will go. So we'll see a lot more transiency across the territory. If we were to see just one case, because the symptoms are so mild, that case could quickly spread to parts of the territory before we become aware that there is coronavirus. And so in terms of the
question, I can answer your question, Terry, if you want, because it was discussed yesterday at the Public Accounts Committee. So I asked that very question. I said, when will we open our borders? Is it that Australia has to be zero cases? Yep. And is that when we're going to open it? Or are we going to have to, at some point, take on a level of risk? And that was the advice that came through, that it's not that we're going to wait until there are zero cases in Australia, because that's unlikely to happen. So at some point, the government is going to have to pull the soft trigger, or whatever the Chief Minister is calling it.
This is a difficult thing as well.
I think the difficulty is
for a lot of us, and this is where I'm a little bit confused, is that right from the get-go, we were told when we talk about coronavirus nationwide, it's about flattening the curve.
That's right.
You know, and I understand
that.
We have done that incredibly well. And I think that, you know, I'll give credit where it's due. The government's done a good job in terms of managing things in the territory to this point. But I think that, you know, that is starting to turn around now. Territorians are starting to ask, okay, well, what is the plan in terms of opening the borders? Now, I've got no hidden agenda here. I've got motive behind this, aside from wanting to make sure that the business community, that our tourism operators, that everybody has got a little bit of clarity. And I think that we all understand that should there be a situation where we end up with a case here in the Northern Territory or other cases identified, we'd actually get that things might have to be brought back a little bit.
I also asked the Chief Minister about whether we would do a deal with other states who don't have COVID.
They're not going to be able to stop as easily, Katie. And so as we release the measures that have been put in place, the restrictions on our lifestyle, as we release those, we also need to keep that curve. It's going to be bumpy, but we want to keep it slightly bumpy. We don't want to see what we've seen in Japan, in Singapore, with that second wave and a sudden outbreak. But we've got to think we're only 2.5 months into this. We were all told up front by Prime Minister Scott Morrison that this was for 6 months. We have done remarkably well. I know people are anxious. We know the economic impact. We have seen a couple of weeks ago measures eased. We're seeing further measures next Friday, significant measures. Nowhere else in Australia are you able to go to the gym. We'll be able to travel freely across the territory. And then once we step through from that, the Chief Minister has said he will provide weekly advice with a 30-day notice.
So for you as the Health Minister, what would you see as being the adequate metrics that need to be in place or measures that we need to make sure are being met nationwide before it's safe to open those borders?
So particularly it's watching what happens across the borders as they relieve their measures. So we're seeing restrictions eased and we know that there's community transmission and we've seen cluster outbreaks. We've seen two clusters in Victoria recently. How do they manage those outbreaks? Can they keep them isolated to a small country town or to certain suburbs rather than seeing the virus run rampant?
So
Katie, we have eased restrictions. We are getting back out there.
Figures aren't always delivered.
Leah, we've said on the 29th of July we will deliver those figures. The questions, it is difficult because 70% of the territory government's income comes from the federal government. They have deferred their
budget. Delay the election.
Do you not know? Do you genuinely not know what the territory's debt position is at?
Leah, we were up front yesterday.
No,
you
were
questions.
Not up
you
front
had two
yesterday.
Hours of questioning
I got absolute
in the Public Accounts
garbage
Committee
from the Chief Minister yesterday.
Well, that's your interpretation.
You
I can't help you interpret
do
it. We
you
can
not
the
know
information.
The territory's debt position.
Right now, we have been working to save lives, to get money out the door,
no
to stimulate
answer.
The economy, to keep people in jobs.
Your line
the March
is
figures
very
were there.
Compelling, Natasha, but the answer
Look,
is very simple.
The big difference is in the territory, I guess, comparatively to the federal government handing down a budget or anybody else handing down a budget, is that we're going to an election on August 22nd, and I think that it is still a precarious situation that we find ourselves in as voters if on July 29 we're finding out when exactly or how exactly the books are looking when it comes to our budget. I know that politically, you know, I can look at this from both sides of the fence. If I was the Labor Party, I would be saying that, you know, that Leah and Terry are going to cut public servant wages, they're going to cut jobs, and they're going to raise your power and water prices. If I was on the other side of the fence, as Terry or Leah earlier I'd be saying, well, Labor can't handle the economy. But what we need to know, and that you can't handle the budget, but what we need to know is exactly how those books are looking. And I think that we owe it to Territorians to be honest about this. People actually need to be educated and have a really fair idea of what they're dealing with when they go to the polls. I feel very passionately about that. No matter which side of the fence you sit on, you need to know exactly how things are looking before you go and vote. You need an educated, you need to be able to make an educated vote.
And what is most concerning is that we all now have to once again take the Chief Minister's word for it and be dished up whatever documentation he wants to provide on 29 July. We have no oversight or vision of what that is. He hasn't come out and said, okay, on 29 July, I'm going to provide this, 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 and this. At the very least, we could then say, that's not good enough. We're also going to need X, Y, and Z. But no, we're going to have to all just wait and suck it up and wait for the Chief Minister to deliver his grand financial statement, which is going to, God knows what that's going to look like. And by then, we're 3 or 4 weeks out from an election. It's not good enough.
Now,
and it defies logic that this government does not know its financial position now.
Interstate, we know that in New South Wales, the Premier on Wednesday became, they're the latest state to implement a 12-month public sector wage freeze. The Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, said the government needed every spare dollar to fight the coronavirus pandemic. Now, I want to say right from the get-go, nobody's suggesting that we cut public servants. Nobody is suggesting that we cut public servants' pay. But what I'm wondering and what I want to know from each of you is, do you actually think that those wages should be frozen for the next 12 months?
So, Katie, we already have a wage freeze in place for politicians and executive
public
servants.
But not public for public, not
no,
for the public
we
sector.
We believe our hard-working frontline public servants, people that are working around the clock to get exemptions in place, to be out there on the borders, in terms of them, nurses, teachers, we believe that we have that balance. We're implementing the recommendations of the Langlands report.
Do you accept, though, as well, that the private sector are doing the same thing and in many cases have taken a 20% pay cut?
Katie, right now would be the worst time possible to cut wages of public servants. People, we've put those executive contracts, we've frozen those wages. We believe we've got that balance. And in terms of the public sector, we know that they're an important part. We will not be cutting those
jobs. I just want to say again, I didn't say a cut to anything. I didn't say a cut to wages. I did not say a cut to public servants. I said a freeze on what they're getting paid right now. Leah, what do you think?
I think that this is really tinkering around the edges. I think it's a false saving. I think public servants seem to be a political go-to, but that's just not the case. We need those people spending that money in our economy. If we were to pull money out of our economy now, it means that's less coffees being bought, that's less meals being bought, that's less dresses, less you name it, and we just can't afford to have that at this point in time. We need every dollar being spent in our local economy.
So
do you disagree with Treasurer Tracy, who said everything's on the table, your own anointed treasurer?
Oh, my gosh. You are so...
Well, that's what she said.
Manipulative.
Terry, what do you reckon?
Well, these, as we've said 100 times, these are unprecedented times. And I think it's an entirely reasonable to consider this. I think it's entirely reasonable as a community leader and as a politician to accept personally a freeze. I think if you were as able to lead this community well, set out a path that inspires people, and say there is a need for us all to practice some kind of restraint going forward, and people actually believe the leadership and we're able to follow that, I think we could do that. But I would agree with Natasha that those on the front line, they are absolutely essential, and I think we should show the utmost respect for those that are actually on the front line. But beyond that, there needs to be a serious and sober consideration of this. And I say that, it's not an easy thing to say, but I say it because I know so many of my friends in the private sector have taken a massive hit, even lost their jobs. So I think it's if we were able to set a vision for the Territory and realise that we're all in this together, and government was actually able to lead us to a better place, we would get there.
We've got so many messages coming through. I've got one here that says, so the private sector is expected to carry all the burden?
Absolutely not. And that is why we need to grow our economy. I mean, we have seen this Labor government waste money hand over fist. It's been a disgrace. And we need to stop the waste and grow our economy. For 4 years, we have trailed. We are the worst performing economy in the nation. And our budget has just exploded. I mean, what do we have to show for the $7 billion in debt? How is the territory better off now than it was 4 years ago for that increase? In 2016, we had $1.8 billion, and now we don't even know how deep we're in on this.
We've got so many messages coming through.
The missing part of this is we're talking about cuts and punitive measures or austerity. What is actually missing is a vision for the territory that causes us to believe in something. The territory has an enormous potential. Start working on real projects that start to lift people and say we're actually going somewhere. That's the missing part.
Oh, we've got a message here. It says it's all very easy to throw stones when you're in opposition. Look, we are going to take a very short break. There's a lot to cover off. We're all fired up this morning. I love it. There's a few for all of you. Don't worry.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
We've got Terry Mills, Leah Finocchiaro and Natasha Files in the studio. There's a lot to cover off on this morning. I do want to just talk about the fact that we've obviously seen the damage to the prison and the situation out at the prison. I guess it was about a week ago, or maybe a bit over a week ago. And it is being reported, Filesy, that the damage bill for the riot at the Darwin Correctional Facility is expected to be at least $40 million. Is that a correct figure?
So, Katie, I haven't got a final figure. It was a significant event out there, and I'd like to acknowledge the prison officers. Often when we think of frontline workers, we think of police and nurses. And although they work in a very structured environment, it's very orderly, when something does happen, all their training and their skills come into play. And so those officers did an amazing job in quelling and stopping that incident. But it was significant. We have already said that we'll do a public investigation around the incident, and we're waiting on those final figures to come through on the cost. But it is a public private partnership, a PPP out there. And so in terms of the financial implications, I have had some initial advice, and I'm waiting on the financial implication to the territory in that final advice.
$40 million is an astronomical figure.
I haven't been given a figure of $40 million.
That's a $1 billion prison. Yeah.
So it's certainly a significant amount of damage. I've been out there and visited the facility. I haven't been given a $40 million figure, but it is a significant incident.
Damage? I mean, if you've been out there.
I haven't been given a figure, Terry, and I just said that.
Robin in Malden wants to know if anyone is going to be charged.
So, serious crimes are investigating it. So police, just because it took place in a prison, doesn't mean that those people won't be held to account and held responsible. And so police are also investigating, and it's a serious crime.
All right. I feel like we just haven't had any information about this. I mean, I remember very well on the morning, Natasha, you were on with Katie just before me, and it was all, I haven't had a briefing yet. And we're going to have a press conference later in the day, which at the time I remember saying it's inconceivable that you couldn't have had information by the time you had your radio interview with Katie. And now in the paper, it's coming out some of these additional details. And, it certainly wasn't put up as such a serious crisis at that time. I mean, $40 million is extraordinary.
Leah, I'm happy to text you every time I do media and provide information, I completely disagree. I spoke to both the morning radios. We did a full press conference with the Corrections Commissioner. I visited the facility. I did further media.
So what does the damage look like? Like, what happened?
Leah, as I've said numerous times, there was fires at that facility. We did see inmates on the roof, but I need to be careful with my comments. It's a police investigation, but I have already said, we said from the outset, that there would be a public investigation, an investigation made public around it. We've acknowledged the seriousness of it, so we certainly have not been hiding anything. I'm happy to flick you a message when I'm doing media so you can listen to in.
I said, only if it's my show.
You know what the issue is here, and all of this talk about, not having the right information or haven't got it yet, and there's going to be an
inquiry.
Neither
of you have asked me for a briefing on it. Jerry Wood has spoken to me about it because he was concerned enough. So I think it's really cheap politics to come in here and throw mud around.
We've
acknowledged that it... Well, you both are. We've acknowledged it was a really serious incident.
I've only spoken half a sentence.
I'm not sure if you can make any other suggestions.
As I begin talking. So I said, you know what the issue here is? It's not the sort of the public inquiry that's going to be managed and getting further information and briefings and updates and things like that and charges possibly be laid. The core issue here is this is a correction facility And people need to have confidence that that facility is working well.
They should have absolute confidence. The facility.
So I'd like to see a strong position in response to that from government, so people get a sense that this they're onto it, they are concerned about the correction facility and restoring people's confidence in it. And I don't hear that. I just hear a lot of weaselly words that sort of create a sense that there's some processes in place, but not addressing the concern that, that Territorians in fact have.
I'm happy to interpret it for you, Terry. I'm happy to play you back my press conference from the day after the event and also the media that I did last week where I talked about the incident. I assured Territorians their safety is first and foremost. All of this took place behind the wire. Nobody was able to be get out of that facility, unlike when the CLP was in government and we saw people escaping. But this is very serious and we've acknowledged that.
All right.
Politics all the time with you.
All right.
Take responsibility.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
I've got Terry Mills, Leah Finocchiaro and Natasha Files in the studio with me. There is a lot still to cover off. We're not going to be able to get through it all, but let's talk about the home improvement scheme. We know that anxious tradies and businesses, well, if they're unsure, if NT, well, if they've been sort of picked to undertake them for work or if they're struggling to get their head around whether they have got work in the pipeline, there is now going to, as I understand it, be a phone line that they're able to call through to work out where things are at. But look, you'd have to say that there's been a lot of concern with the tradies scheme right from the get-go. We've had a number of catch-ups with Sean Drabsh to try and get our head around the information. And I know that the Department of Business has been trying to get through a lot of different schemes, but it's imperative that we get this right so that our tradespeople are able to get out there and get that work done. It is all about trying to stimulate the economy as quickly as possible.
This scheme has been fraught from the start. Of course, it's a great idea and it's designed to be a stimulus and get money spinning. But of course, we saw the Chief Minister changed the rules of the game when he cancelled it and changed the time period, and that has just seen this descend into chaos. We have tradies who have no ability to understand what workloads they've got coming forward. They've had all their work dry up because of how slow it's been to process. Yesterday we were told in the public hearing that 75 staff have now been, 74 plus 4 coming, so that's 78 staff have been put onto the scheme, but even with that huge volume of people, we will only see 1,000 processed a week. And that means we've still got, at a minimum, 17 more weeks of processing to go. So for some tradies, they will be waiting an extraordinarily long time to see any workflow. It's doing more damage to many businesses than good. And the Chief Minister really needs to, you know, if we need to double those public service numbers to take the pressure off the ones who are working extraordinary overtime and get this thing processed, then so be it. But it's the unintended consequences has had hugely damaging impacts.
And certainly has on the reputation of the Labor government. And don't bring me joy to say that, but we're all waiting for some leadership to be able to manage the rebuild of the Northern Territory, and it is an almighty task, and it's sort of almost been concealed from view. But when the only thing we can see is when we put out an important scheme such as this, if it was managed really well, it would instill confidence in people that the government itself then has the capacity to manage the rebuild. They were late to describe how they're going to respond, the sort of structure that they have in place. We came out nearly a month ago. The major business groups came out a very similar sort of model. And then we had the Chief Minister come out and describe something that is not quite clear. But what we can all see is the scheme. If you can't manage that scheme well, you can't build confidence and people won't believe your capacity to rebuild the territory.
And it's the third time we've run the scheme. I mean, the beauty of the scheme, and we called for the scheme prior to the government actually implementing it. I mean, this is the third time the scheme has run. So clearly that snap decision of the Chief Minister has thrown this into chaos. And at a time when businesses are already struggling, you know, this is just adding a level of pain that's unimaginable. I was pleased to hear that the Department of Business is now, at the very least, going to tell tradies how many applications are sitting there. That doesn't mean that all that work is going to flow, but certainly up until yesterday, tradies who were ringing the department could not get information about how many applications they had.
We will wrap up. We're going to have to wrap up because we've only got sort of 3 minutes before 10 o'clock. Natasha Files, Attorney General, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Wolfie.
Big thank you to Leah Finocchiaro, the opposition leader.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, everyone. I hope hope you're, what's the slogan? Be a Territorian or something?
Yeah, get out and travel around.
Travel around.
Is that the slogan?
There's some new slogan.
I'm always a Territorian.
It's got to be better than Boundless Possible anyway.
Terry Mills.
Boundless Possible. Whatever happened to that?
Thank God.
Terry Mills, leader of Territory Alliance. Always good to catch up. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Isn't it glorious, the weather?
Oh, yes. It's so good.
It's time to find people down south.
Yeah.
Send them photos of our sunsets.
Yeah, exactly. They're glorious at this time.
We want people soon to have those beautiful plans in place to come and visit us.
Spend their money.
Absolutely.
Here.
Good on you guys. Thanks so much for your time this morning.